away we go with episode 39.
All right. Oh, and we're going to do something today that we keep forgetting to do, but people keep asking us to do.
What's
today
that?
Is Thursday, August 24th.
Is it the 24th today?
Yes,
people
it is.
People keep asking us to do that?
Yes, because then they can't figure out if these articles are old or new or what.
Okay.
Because, you know, it sounds like it's just happening today when we talk about it, because we're you know, just...
We're so in the now.
That's exactly what's going on.
Fucking around with the audio setup again. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get my mic on the left channel and your mic on the right channel.
Right.
So then we can kind of play with the volume levels. I can play with the volume levels in post.
Yes, which would be
really
a boon.
Because nice, oftentimes my mic's low or your mic's low.
Or even worse, my mic is low and your mic is high, because then people have to hear you.
No. See, that's better.
Oh.
See, actually, that's the whole reason I want to do it, so that I can eliminate yours altogether. in my struggles with that, I actually got a right-left splitter for the microphones.
All right.
Mine had gone to the left, and yours had gone to the right, and then stereo into our little iPod recorder.
Sure.
The problem is the line in, there's two settings on the recorder. There's a line in and a mic. Mic records mono. Line in records stereo.
Okay.
Great. But the problem is that you need a preamp to record line in.
Ah.
So then I'd have to feed the whole thing through a preamp. And then I'm just like, God damn it. What the hell?
So can't we just buy a cheap preamp from, like, Radio Shack or what have you?
I don't know. I've been looking at them. And if we preamp before our mics get to the splitter, which you can buy a mic preamp for like $24, but then we got about two of them.
Okay.
If we do it after the fact, we can get a stereo preamp, and then the stereo preamp will go after the splitter. So, and I have a preamp actually for my record player.
Yeah.
But it's got a plug and shit, and then all of a sudden I'm like, well, that totally defeats the purpose of the portability of this whole thing.
Right. So the preamps, obviously, if we get one we want, it's going to have, like, batteries or something.
I don't know. Yeah. So I have frustrations with our recording. Although, I will say, this little recorder thing has been great for quality. There's no glitches. There's no hard drive noises anymore.
Yeah.
The hard drive noises on the one I did with Mike. There was a lot of people saying that it didn't bother him. It drove me fucking up the wall. That kind of shit makes me crazy. And hopefully this time my mic is down and out of the way of my mouth so we don't get the popping sound.
Yes.
But I have a tendency...
Or you could just stop speaking.
I do have a tendency to pop and lock on occasion. So.
That's horrible.
Popping and locking. I don't think we have any comments or corrections from the last show.
I don't believe so either. Although we are having an interesting debate about Keira Knightley in a pirate outfit.
Yes, we are. So if anyone would like to check out the forums, it's www.roxormedia.com/forums. Haha.
Forum. Singular.
It's forum? It's singular?
Forum.
.easy, our hosting provider, is having a sale until the 31st.
Sunday.
Which is $5 for a year of hosting.
Ooh, nice.
You only get like 20 megs, but I think I'm going to do Podzor and then auto-forward it to Roxor Media. Because we've been meaning to do that for a long time.
But you're paying for what? You're paying for the whole... We don't need anything more than a domain name, which you can get for $7.99 a year as it is.
You have to auto-forward... You have to get auto-forwarding, though.
They don't have built-in auto-forwarding on our site? We need to switch to GoDaddy, because that's bullshit.
You can get a $7.99 account with auto-forwarding?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. I do that on the Tribal Edge Knives.
Oh, really?
Site for Chuck and Mushtak. Plug. They got some really nice knives, by the way. I say we check
them
out.
Yes, they do.
Okay. Well, let's make that transition into martial arts then.
Okay. Nice. That's a good one.
Yeah, like kind of fits.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? How did the other comment and corrections? What did you think of the audio bumper?
The bumpers? I liked them.
Did you?
I liked them. In fact, we got a comment from Woozy.
Yeah.
And she said she enjoyed them as well.
Yes, and she's the only one that commented. So until people start complaining, I think I'm just going to keep doing it.
All right, that's cool. Or until you get sick of it. I don't know. How, I mean, was the process hard?
The only part that's difficult about it is finding the spots where we transition. I have to sort of scan through and then find it and then cut it and add in the music and do the fade in and fade out.
Right.
So, I don't know. It turned what used to be probably an hour process into a two-hour process.
Ouch.
So
I don't know. That doesn't seem worth it to me.
Yeah.
I'll just
do it until I don't think it's worth it doing it anymore.
All right. That's cool.
So my martial arts stuff. I managed.
Oh, don't we need a bumper for martial arts stuff, or we go right into martial arts stuff because that's the first one?
Well, see, what I'll do is I'll just make the cut.
Ah, I just figured if we get a little bit of quiet in there, you can see.
All right.
Ah, it's not important.
See, and then I'll put the transition there instead of the one before.
Very nice. Well, it's sort of a feint, if you will.
That's right. Oh,
ooh.
Nice. The Fight Science show I saw on National Geographic.
And how was it?
It was very cool.
Was it?
A very interesting show. I wish it were a series instead of a show.
So it was just a one-time deal?
Yeah, it seems like they've got plenty of material that they can make a series
out
of the whole thing.
Definitely.
I was a little bit disappointed in things like, for example, they went through, they were doing an analysis of weapons, and, you know, they kind of marketize it a little bit.
Sure.
So they're talking about what is the ultimate weapon.
Oh, Lord.
Right? And, you know, I guess for experienced martial artists, it's interesting in that, you know, you can ignore sort of what their opinion of the best weapon is, but they do talk. They had Dan Insanto on there.
Oh, they did.
Yeah,
nice.
And, he used a stick against a crash test dummy, bashing the piss out of it.
He did.
Yeah. Yep.
But they pointed out that
that wasn't as strong as somebody with a bow staff.
Well, of course not. The mechanics behind using both weapons are vastly different.
And that's what they go into. And then they say, but the stick hat allows you more control than the longer reach weapon does. So you want a balance. We're still looking for the ultimate weapon, and that balance between control, power, and, I don't know, something fucking else.
You can't. I mean, it's so situational. I mean,
right.
There's a perfect weapon for the for the current conditions.
Right.
You know,
right.
For the current scenario. You can't, once you get outside the scope of a defined scenario,
yeah.
You can't pick a perfect weapon.
And I think that
well, except for me.
Right. because you are the perfect weapon?
Yeah. Well, I think that was Jeff Speakman, wasn't it?
I think it was Jeff Speakman, actually.
Well.
Okay. So anyway, it was, you know, and like I say, for someone that's into martial arts, they can kind of ignore all that stuff. And just because they have, for example, they have a guy like chopping through a torso of ballistics gel.
Nice.
Just to
with
see,
a sword?
Yeah, with a katana.
Oh.
Just to see, like, and it's funny because the martial artists are, for the most part, very humble about the whole thing. And, you know, the guy who chopped into the ballistics gel was like, it was really cool because I've never had the opportunity to really go full force at something. And, you know, and he said when he shook that ballistics gel thing, it looked like jelly, but when he, like, when he grabbed a hold of it, it felt like a person. And
wild.
And in fact, on the podcast, one of the guys that did that exercise said that he felt himself emotionally holding back.
Because it felt
so human.
Like
that
real.
It got really kind of creepy for him. But
that's interesting.
They showed a guy who was an archer. And I would have, for example, I would have really liked to have seen the archery into ballistics gel.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a guy that was throwing shurikens. I would have liked to have seen that into ballistics gel. So some of the stuff they just really kind of glossed over a little bit, where I would have liked to see a lot more depth. But
hence, you want a series.
Hence, I want a series. But, like I say, it was really good. I enjoyed it quite thoroughly.
Interesting.
So there's my follow. If you see it, if you're browsing around and you see it, definitely, definitely watch it. If you've got a TiVo, TiVo it.
On the D20 scale, what do you think?
On the D20 scale, I'll give it a 17. A solid 17.
All right, good.
Yep.
Okay.
Definitely entertaining enough to watch. I would even say it's probably going to be out on DVD eventually. I would say it's interesting enough to rent on DVD when it comes
good.
Out.
Yep. Excellent.
So my next link, oh shit, I should have done a little bit more research on the next ones coming up. The next one is more of a link than anything else.
I skimmed through it, he had a lot to say. It was a four-part article,
yeah.
With paragraphs the size of Texas.
Yes, and he is one of the guys that hosts the Karate Cafe podcast.
Oh, okay.
And you're right, he had a lot to say. And the article is, did I mention the article? The article is, or his blog has a four-part article on the meaning of a black belt.
Yes, which we've had many discussions about.
And I was working on my own article, which makes me wonder if you heard our podcast. But
maybe.
Anyway, he makes a lot of good points. Not every point he makes is a good one, in my opinion. But I think he's very careful in the first part. He does say, this is what it means to me.
Right.
Or these are my thoughts on this. This is not necessarily the way it is, the truth,
yep.
or anything like that, but these are my thoughts on this whole thing. But I did think that he just had some interesting things to say about, well, the sections are, one is humility, one is rank, and internal versus external rewards. And then he's got a part one, which is just an intro. And I, like I say, he talks a lot about, well, and I've heard him complain about it on the podcast before. There's the Karate Cast podcast, and we've talked about this as well, where the guy introduced himself as Grandmaster Steve Pinder, whatever it is, and that is not very humiliating.
Humble. It's not very humble.
Very humble. It's not very humble.
It may be humiliating.
It may be humiliating, depending on who you are. Yeah, so, and he also talks about humility as far as when you're practicing with other students. And again, these are a lot of things that we've talked about in the past. He does mention, I think, what's one of the things that's really interesting is one of his first premises?
Premise?
One of the first premises he makes is that really to be a black belt and to be an instructor, you should be living in a martial way. And he said there's not really room for the... He said hobbyists shouldn't be black belts. I mean, I'm obviously... what do you call that?
And I think he probably means that in the way of what most people consider a black belt, which is someone who, like you say, he lives in a martial way. Somebody who, that's their lifestyle.
Right.
Versus...
They've made a lifestyle choice.
Versus, I'm just doing this on occasion because I need a good workout and
right.
because, you know...
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I think there's a fine line to be drawn in there, you know?
Yeah.
I
understand his point. It's hard to actually put it into words what he means, but I understand his intent behind that.
Yeah.
It's about dedication.
I think so too. It's about dedication, and it's also about you know, you've gotta make sure that the black belts the people that you're awarding black belts to are people that you can be proud of when they go to other schools or they meet other people,
right.
and things like that.
Right.
And
so when they say they're from your school,
right.
you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I had an interesting experience the other day I met a black belt at Chance, and he was a black belt in another style, and he was slow and uncoordinated and a little cocky, in my opinion.
Mm.
And he was a fourth degree.
Wow.
And I thought, and it's funny because I started thinking about it, really, and all the black belts that I've really met or come in contact with through the various schools that I've been at have always been, to me, what a black belt should be. Someone who's respectful of others, someone who is competent in their craft, and just all the things that go along with that.
Yep.
And I think I've self-selected my sample. Because what has a tendency to happen is, I think if I were looking for a school to go to, and I walked into a school where the instructors weren't that, I would walk out and never go back.
Right.
So when I think of, you know, the population of black belts in the world, my perception has always been that 90% of them are incredibly competent and very humble and all know their craft very, very well. And I'm starting to feel like that's really not the case.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would... For me, mine's just the opposite. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at 10%.
Do you think it's 10? Do you think
10% of the black belts fit my personal definition of what a black belt should be?
Now, that's not necessarily... I mean, I think that, for example, it's very legitimate to say that you can be a black belt in sport taekwondo.
Right.
And obviously, you're not going to know anything about ground fighting.
Sure.
And that,
for me personally, yeah. I would not go train with a school whose sole purpose... I would not go train with someone who's...
those people's... Their black belts are not unearned.
Oh, no. Yeah. It certainly has nothing to do with whether they were earned or not.
It just has to do with
my perception of learning from a black belt.
Yeah.
Or from going to a school where they're black belts, they have to, like you said, you have this criteria in your own head that you've already selected.
Right.
And if someone doesn't meet that criteria,
you would walk away. Yeah.
And for me, it's about 10%. Right. Probably my guess is about 10% of the people I meet that are black belts would have something to offer where I would want to stay and work with them.
Well, and I do think that it's important to recognize the fact that, you know, to be a black belt or to even be a great martial artist doesn't mean that you have to take on and defeat all comers. It doesn't mean
true.
That you have to be the greatest forms competitor in the world.
Correct.
It doesn't mean any of that stuff. Well, look at who was the Tai Chi instructor that you had?
Greg Lawton.
And he didn't have a bunch of awards lining his walls.
Exactly. Because that's not why he did it.
All the forms competitions that he won, and if he won any,
yeah.
You don't know.
I have no idea.
And
you know what? I never asked because I didn't care.
Right. Right. Because he had competence, and he had your respect.
Yep.
Because you had his respect as a student.
Right.
So I think that to me is, it's more about than just whether or not you can kick ass or whether you're awesome at your forms or anything like that. There is a martial way about the whole thing. But, again, that martial way doesn't include specific things. It just, I don't know, it includes, it's about how much you choose to have martial arts involved in your life.
Yeah.
In whatever form that might take, you know? So, anyway, I encourage people to go out and read the articles. Listen to the podcast. Oh shit!
Close down Firefox and forget the whole thing.
And let's call the whole thing off.
What was the next one? Was the eight spheres?
The eight spheres. This actually comes from an article I found on Stephen Barnes' site, or it's a link to a link that's on Stephen Barnes' site.
I skipped all the text. I just looked right at the pictures because those really were, you know, they gave me a better idea of what the whole point was, and I understand this. It's really about ranges.
It's about ranges, and I thought it was particularly interesting that it's an interesting way to break up a self-defense scenario more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And just to go through them quickly. Sphere one is...
Just you.
just you, and it's really your awareness of your environment more than anything else.
Right.
You know, don't come around any, you know, close to any sharp corners. Be careful of the dark places as you're walking through a parking lot.
Right.
Don't walk next to the car. Walk, like, right down the middle of the parking ramp kind of thing. So it's awareness issues. The second sphere is when you see someone that could potentially be an aggressor, that you have an awareness of them.
Right. So they've entered your sphere of awareness.
They've entered your sphere. Do they have a hand behind their back?
Right.
And if so, what's the potential
right.
of that?
Right. Well, how are they dressed?
How are they dressed? You know, and, you know, everybody says stereotypes are bad, but...
Hey, if they save your life, stereotype away.
That's right. That's my opinion as well. What's the next sphere? The next sphere is the distance at which you are a single step from your attacker, or your attacker is a single step from you. Because there's a large difference between if you're walking down a parking garage and somebody's 20 feet away.
Right.
And
I would say this is a little bit more than a single step. Because a single step, in my opinion, puts you inside kicking range. And kicking range is sphere 4. So sphere 3 is... They're getting to the point where you're a little nervous about them coming into your... The range where they could attack you in some form or another with their
right.
physical body.
Right. I think so, too.
They're close to that range, but not in it yet.
Right. Right. So sphere 4 is kicking range, where they or you... have the physical ability to essentially lift up your foot and kick them.
Right.
And that's the longest weapon that people have without a weapon.
Right.
Weapon. And so, you know, all of a sudden they actually have it color coded. Your awareness goes red because all of a sudden there's a genuine potential for that person to attack.
Right. Or pink if your color's off on your monitor.
Or pink if color's off on your monitor.
Which you probably can't see, can
right.
you?
Right, and this is also the sphere where you can make sweet love to them. Or at least some people can.
Right.
So then we have sphere 5, which is punching, same as kicking, except using your fists instead of feet.
Right. That's what punching is. So it's sort of not like kicking.
It's not like kicking, except it's punching.
Right.
6 is infighting.
Or what we like to call trapping range.
Trapping range. We often call it trapping range.
Trapping range is that transition between punching and grappling. It's that space between those two.
Lots of elbows flying.
Knees.
Lots of uppercuts, knees, things like that. 7 is actual grappling, where you're wrestling around but still standing. And then 8 is ground fighting. But... from looking at this, one of the reasons I put it on the podcast is because I thought it was a very interesting way to break down the self-defense scenario.
Yeah.
And I have read the book Aikido and the Dynamic Sphere, where they talk about 4 different levels, which is sort of situational awareness and then awareness of individuals or something like that, and then physical contact.
Okay.
And so they just break it
a little more broad.
It's a little more broad.
Well, actually, Hawk Hockum teaches an even broader perspective than these guys. He goes to, like, 12. Because he starts at basically ballistic missile range, moves into long-range rifles, moves into handgun range. Then you've got weapons range. Then you've got kicking range, punching range.
Yep.
And, you know, today's world, I mean...
Yep.
You're out 7 to 10 yards, you're in handgun range.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, further than that, of course, but when you're within 7 to 10 yards of somebody, that is optimal handgun range.
Yep.
You
yep.
know, so, eh.
Yeah. So.
I like it because you can, I don't know, you got to think, those are things you should think about.
Those
you need to be
things.
Aware of those because you do different things based on how close you are to your opponent.
Yeah.
You need to know what things, what capabilities you have based on how close or far you are away.
Yeah.
And what things to look for.
And it actually might not be a bad way to approach like a self-defense seminar.
Right.
You know, is teaching people about, you know, it's funny because I think, too, that oftentimes I sort of, people get the impression that because I'm a martial artist that I walk around paranoid all the time.
You don't?
Well, only because everyone's out to get me.
Oh. Yeah.
But I think for others, it's not really a paranoia, because it's not like when I'm walking through a dark parking garage, I'm thinking there's someone behind every turn.
Yes.
What it is it's a DEFCON 1 awareness.
Right.
Of saying, this has a chance of potentially being a dangerous situation. I'm just going to keep my eyes open.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
I'm not going to panic. If some scary guy walks out of a corner somewhere,
it's not like you're going to jump into some fighting stance.
I'm not even going to panic then.
Right.
It's just your levels of awareness get raised a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then, of course, I think...
My wife likes to accuse me of being paranoid, but I like to prefer it, calling it being, you know, prepared.
Yeah. I think that, and they did a good job in color coding it. I think Sphere 3 and 4 is where you need to be paranoid.
Right.
You know, if somebody walks out of the dark corner of a parking garage and starts walking toward me, I'm not going to panic at that point.
But you are prepared.
But I'm aware.
I know when that happens to me, if I'm have to walk by somebody that I don't know.
Right.
I can, my stomach tightens up and I go into a little bit of a breathing, and I don't like put my hands up or anything, but I'm just in case. You never know. I mean, these people on the streets, when they're going to attack you, they don't tell you beforehand, "Hey dude, I'm going to attack you."
Right.
They'll come out of nowhere, and so you just need to have the mindset of, this guy's more than likely, he's just going to walk on by me.
Well,
but there's this slight chance that if he does, I need to be at least ready for it.
Well, and it's I think an interesting self-defense scenario, in my opinion, is somebody walks up to you and asks you what time it is. Don't look down at your watch. Raise your watch up to your eye level.
Yeah.
So that you're not looking away from them. You just lift your watch up so that you can look at them and see your watch at the same time.
Right.
Is that paranoid? No.
Nah, I don't think so.
I think it's just being smart, in my opinion.
Right.
It's not insulting the guy.
Right.
You know?
It's paranoid till somebody stabs you and takes your wallet, and then all of a sudden, why weren't you... You know, then all of a sudden, it's not paranoia anymore.
Exactly. Especially if the guy's wearing a watch.
Or the other thing, too, is to show them your watch and let them read the time themselves.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because then they have to look away.
I have a tendency to think they have to get a little too close for that.
Well, it depends on if you got the big Mickey Mouse hands on your watch.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Like Flava Flav.
Yes.
You
got a big clock,
and
you'll
you
be like,
"Yo,
bitch.
Maybe that's why it works.
Look at my clock.
I know what time it is.
You know what time
and
it is?
Now you do too." All right.
So, wow, that was a whole slew of martial arts stuff.
That was 27 minutes of martial arts stuff. It wasn't.
And we only got I think an hour we can get on this before your battery, or was that just the other day?
That's right. No.
So we gotta. Yeah. So this is gonna keep our tempo up.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do a little bumper action for some technical science stuff. Tech and science.
On tech and science.
So I'm a total Rightly fanboy now.
I wanted to ask you about this.
Dan posted the Rightly link again because Rightly, which is the online word processor, now which is purchased by Google, is now actually in beta usable. And I've been using it for the last 2 days since it's been up. I love it.
Now, why do you like it more than, say, a blog?
Okay.
Not a blog. Say a wiki.
A wiki? Here's the deal. With wikis, you have to put special characters codes in. If you want to bold something, if you want to underline it,
can't
it doesn't
you just
support
click on the
tabs.
Toolbar at the top?
Yeah, but it puts stuff in the text.
Oh, it doesn't actually display it as...
So Rightly does what any word processor does. All those special tags are hidden behind the scenes.
Now, they do have that wiki paint. Did you remember me showing that?
Yeah, it didn't work.
And
it didn't support tabs.
Yeah. Oh.
It doesn't really do what you want it to do. Writely actually works just like you're using Microsoft Word.
Very cool.
Exports to open document format, exports to Word, exports to PDF, imports from Word, OpenOffice, RTFs, all the imports. You can collaborate.
So that's a Google thing.
Yeah, it's bought by Google. Now, you get this. You can do real-time collaboration, where you and I can be working on the same document at the same time.
And I can see your changes?
It does auto-saving.
Wow.
You can see the changes.
That's crazy.
And if you try to change something someone else is changing in the same spot at the same time, it gives you a dialog box pops up that says, hey, somebody else is working on this. What do you want to do? Or fix your problem, whatever.
That's really cool.
Supports all the same thing that Google Mail does, which is being able to categorize things with tags.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you can do all sorts of cool stuff.
Wow.
You can publish it to make it publicly available. So what I started doing now is the last story I wrote.
Yeah.
I published it and linked that to my blog instead of dumping it on my wiki.
Wow.
Not only that, it's great. For me personally, the main reason I wanted something like this was because I have multiple computers that I work on my stuff from.
Yes.
And I want to be able to stop working on it here, go over there, open it up, and continue on. I don't want to copy a file, remember if I forgot to forget to FTP this up to my site. Right. The advantage that this has is collaborative.
It's WYSIWYG.
It's got a revision history.
Nice.
You can roll back. You can collaborate in real time.
Wow.
It's the bomb.
So Google's got email, calendar, spreadsheet, and word processor now.
There you go.
And we've
It's a webilized operating system, dude.
We've talked a lot about essentially all of the shit that you're ever going to need is going to be on the web.
Yep.
The only problem that you do have then is internet connection.
Right.
If you don't have the internet connection, you're effed in the a-hole.
Yes, that is true. That is a big downfall for that.
But you like it.
I love it.
You
I think it's great.
Good.
It's, I mean, right online with what's the other script writing software I use, which is Celtics. You know, that thing's along the similar vein.
But for that, you need a client installed.
You do need to have a client, which actually,
although Celtics does a lot of stuff,
I eventually think we're going to see that go away. The client.
Oh really?
Because it's built on Firefox technology.
So and it should.
Eventually,
it really should.
Maybe I'm wrong, but eventually, I'd like to see that be able to run in a browser,
or at least just to be an add-in.
Right, because it already is a browser. It runs in a browser.
Yeah.
It's just its own instance of the Firefox browser.
Yeah, the add-in would be cool.
Yeah, so...
Cool. All
anyway,
right.
I'm going to give that
so
a 19.
So try Writely. All the writers out there, give Writely a try.
Yep.
And especially if you have stuff to collaborate on, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Very cool.
All right.
So our next article is Dan Loves Ubuntu.
You love Ubuntu.
Oh, I want to make sweet love to Ubuntu.
Oh, yeah. Right in the serialized cable hole.
That's right. Right in the universal serial bus.
Right in the COM port.
So I was looking for a distro the other day, and I got some new laptops from work.
Okay.
And couldn't find one, and like SUSE is really heavy. I mean, it's a fucking 5-CD download.
That's a bitch.
And I don't have a DVD player. Or a reader in the new laptops that I got.
Okay.
And so it's just a pain in the ass. And I'm like, well, what do I really want to do? I don't want a Fedora because Fedora is huge as well.
It is.
Ubuntu is brilliant.
Yep.
What they do is you download a live CD. On that live CD, you can either work with that live CD or you can double-click the install. When you click the install, it goes through a standard install just like any other flavor of Linux does.
Yep.
It'll wipe your drives clean. It'll do whatever it needs to do. It'll install the full version of Ubuntu on your hard drive. One disk.
Yep.
Right? Then what you do is next time you boot up Ubuntu, they've got this really slick add and remove programs where you can go in there and you can add OpenOffice. You can add... different
all
kinds of scientific
calculators.
All
the cool shit you want.
All the cool shit that you want. The only thing that was missing a little bit for me, and I know this would just be a matter of me learning how to do it and doing it, so it's not that big a deal, but it doesn't have a web server on it.
Eh.
But you know what? If I'm running a web server on my machine... I really should know how to install the web server on my machine anyway.
Right. And to be honest, installing Apache on a Linux box
is easy.
A cakewalk.
Okay. And I just stopped there. I didn't go into any research to do it.
Well, and I know Ubuntu, their thing is we want this to be a good user, a good and easy and user experience.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. In fact, I found that the last time I was messing around with builds, or with distributions, and I found Ubuntu as well, and it's fantastic. In fact, I used Kubuntu, which is basically Ubuntu with the KDE interface on top.
Yep. And I just went for the standard GNOME.
Now, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but when I was messing around with all those virtual machine things, if you had any virtual apps, they always ran Ubuntu. All those virtual machine apps, like the virtual web space and that kind of thing, where you can surf the web securely and all that, all with Ubuntu.
And I'll just a brief, I think I'll do more research on it for next time, but a brief synopsis on virtualization. There's a thing out there called VMware, and it essentially allows you to run a computer within a computer.
Yep.
And the player is available for free. I don't know if
we talked about this.
Did we?
Yeah, like six episodes ago or so. Okay, we did a whole big thing on it because I was.
But I think, did you mention all of the pre-defined packages out there?
No, I did not. So, we mentioned just the web one, I think.
Okay, so out on the VMware site, I believe, there's a bunch of prepackaged OSs where you just download that file, you unzip that file, and then that's your entire OS already set up for what you
want.
So you
don't have to reformat it, do any of that stuff.
Any of that garbage.
It's very handy.
Yeah, very handy to play with. Very kind of fun for trying out Linux versions.
I actually, with the intent of running a full Linux operating system, have a build of Windows XP done up in a virtual machine. So I can run Linux as my main operating system, and then when I need Windows, zip over to the VMware and run Windows XP. Problem is, the VMware stuff does not support your DirectX stuff yet. I mean, it's in its infancy.
It uses the absolutely most generic drivers that it can.
But that will be coming soon.
Very soon. And the reason it does that is so that you can move those from machine to machine to machine and not have to worry about driver compatibility.
Right.
So.
Anyway, all right, Ubuntu is cool.
Try it out. Next big news.
I love this. I was just listening to NPR on the way over here, and they were talking about this.
Big news in the tech and science world.
Pluto is no longer
planet. We've lost Pluto.
We now have eight planets in our solar system.
We now have eight planets in our solar system. Yep. A completely arbitrary decision was made by some
group
body somewhere that they argued about for weeks and months.
So the official definition apparently now of a planet is it has to be somewhat round, has to circumnavigate the sun, and it has to move other bodies near it out of its path.
Oh, really?
And the reason Pluto does not comply is because there are other bodies that are near it that are not really affected or moved too much by it.
Well, I do know that Pluto, the other thing about Pluto is that it's technically a binary planet.
Meaning there's two?
Meaning meaning the center of its rotation around its moon is outside the surface of Pluto.
Really?
So they actually rotate around each other at a point in space.
See, and that's probably technically where they get off saying it's not a planet is because that moon would have to rotate around it versus it sharing this rotation around each other. So therefore,
it's not in the elliptic, or not the elliptic. It's not in the plane of the solar system. It's outside the plane of the solar system.
Okay.
So that could be another reason. But essentially what the whole hubbub was about, they either had to add four or remove Pluto. Because they found four or six other things
planets.
That were possible planets. Like they found Xena. That's just ridiculously far, but supposedly it's as big as Pluto is. I'm talking straight out my ass here, but you know, and they found other stuff, and it's like, well, we either really have to make these planets. If Pluto's a planet, these things have got to be planets,
right?
Or, you know, because in my opinion, I can see where they're coming from because Pluto really, which one of these is not like the other? Pluto.
Well, there you go.
I have a feeling it's going to become a lot like Y, as far as vowels go. Because
A, I, O, U, and sometimes Y.
Right.
So we're going to have all the planets I can't name and sometimes Pluto?
Yes. And so what will happen is that if your kid goes to science, fourth grade science class, or whatever you learn that sixth grade science class.
I was just going
to
ask about this.
They're going to say, there are 8 planets in our solar system. Now,
but my dad said there's 9.
Yeah, and that's when they say, and recently Pluto was, you know, was decided that it's not a planet. So there will always be the mention of Pluto.
Right.
There are 8 planets plus Pluto.
Right.
It'll always
be a quasi-planet.
It's a quasi-planet. It is a planetoid.
All right.
And my last tech and science news.
Bryce, yes. the
yes.
Fractal.
Yes.
Oh.
You can get version 5 Bryce for free until the 31st, so I better post this fast.
That is a brilliant app. I use that all the time when
I
working at our old job.
Mike would
man,
like
I love that for developing.
Now, you obviously, have to give them, you have to register and give them your email and stuff like
right.
that. But
free for 30 days?
Free for free.
They're just going to let you download it for free?
Yes. Now they're on
and
version,
then not.
They're on version 5.5 and soon going up to 6.
Oh.
So my guess is that you're going to get a lot of spam saying, hey, you should download 6. But I get that spam anyway.
So do I.
So yeah,
all
version 5
spam,
is absolutely
spam.
Free. And I figured you graphics people out
yeah.
there might enjoy
Bryce is, an,
some,
is awesome.
Some free Bryce. Free Bryce.
That was, who did Bryce? Same guy who did Kai's Power Tools and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Just the interface
I think
is
a different
brilliant.
Company bought him. I hate the interface,
love
by
it.
The way.
Frickin' love
I hate
it.
Hate it. Well, I'm running 1600 by 1200, and it's a fucking tiny square in the middle of my screen.
Oh, well.
Plus, for all those that are unfamiliar with Bryce, that are planning on running, I could not close the fucking application. Could not figure out how to close it. Why? Because the menu bar hides itself. It goes full screen automatically, then the menu bar hides itself. So I had to actually push, once I pushed the mouse to the top of the screen, I think I remembered it. I was like, oh, fuck, that's right, it hides it.
You just got to think with the creative parts of your brain, Dan.
Yeah. Or get pissed off that they're fucking trying to make a little puzzle for you.
Or do that. All right, let's move on to some other stuff here. Movies for Matt and Trey.
Matt Stone and Trey Parker are making 2 more movies. One's going to be a Rubber Suit Godzilla movie.
So Matt and Trey, once again, are going to do 2 really dumb movies.
Yeah.
Like all the other movies they've ever done.
Yeah.
They're dumb.
Yeah.
South Park, funny. All the other movies they've done that have been real life, dumb.
Dumb.
Speaking of dumb.
Speaking of dumb movies.
Snakes on a motherfucking plane.
Snakes on a motherfucking plane. I am fascinated by the whole snakes on a plane thing. So Snakes on a Plane made, what did they make?
$15
million. $15 million. And it cost them $30 million to make. Now, the $30 million, I don't know if that includes marketing. I'm guessing they spent some money on the marketing.
Yeah, I'm guessing, because you saw an advertisement every 30 seconds
yeah.
on TV.
Yeah.
No, wait, go back here. I want to show you this thing. I have something I have to say about this, but I don't get.
Yes.
This is what this says. Okay. They were shocked. Somehow these people were just shocked and disappointed.
The $15.2 million box office.
They were disappointed at the gross because, apparently, there were lofty expectations created by an early swell of chat room excitement and fan-generated trailers with gushing praise.
Yeah.
Snakes on a plane, you fucking idiots.
I call bullshit.
If you... Who looked at this trailer and went, holy shit, dude, what a brilliant idea, snakes on an airplane.
Well, this is the thing, though, and this is what I didn't get for a long time. I'm thinking Snakes on a Plane, this is the dumbest thing ever. And I'm not sure exactly how this happened. Either before or after they finished the movie, one of the two, they knew that it was going to be the worst movie ever made.
Right.
So they tried to make it like, hee hee hee, we're making the worst movie ever made. See our movie.
That's exactly what I thought all the big hubble was about. Right. Was like, this is the most ridiculous movie you could ever think of.
Right.
That's funny. Come see it because it's ridiculous.
And that works, like, for a midnight movie after the fact.
Right.
Like, you can't create one of those.
Right.
Jen and I were just talking about it because she was talking about Harry Potter. Oh, she was talking about Da Vinci Code, the book. And she said, you know, she's heard from a lot of people that Demons and Angels, the book Dan Brown wrote before Da Vinci Code, is actually a better book.
It is.
And she said that she didn't get how Da Vinci Code became so popular when the book before it was just as controversial, if not more so, and even better. And I said, honey, there's an X factor to all this stuff.
Yeah, who knows?
That sometimes shit just catches fire, and there really isn't a reason for it.
Right.
It's random fucking chance, you know?
Yep.
I mean, you look at these internet videos sometimes, and we were talking about podcasting, and how that some of these podcasts, like Keith and the Girl is number one again on Podcast Alley.
Right. And you and I have had this discussion. You love it. I think it's retarded.
Right. And I think that the important thing is that, first of all, you've got to get people to listen the first time. And second of all, you've got to get them to keep listening after they listen the first time.
Right.
But at the same time, sometimes it's you get the right news article, you get the right piece of this or the right piece of that, and boom, you know,
yep.
You're good to go.
Wildfire.
But the thing is you can't create that. You
no.
can't make that happen. You have to make your stupid planes on snakes on a motherfucking plane and hope it hits. And in fact, I would say they would probably have had a better chance at this movie being more significant or make more money if they didn't do any marketing at all.
Yeah. You call it Snakes on a Plane, and nobody knows anything about it, but it's got Samuel L. Jackson in it.
And you're like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
A movie called Snakes on the Plane that's got Sam Jackson
right. in
it?
Right. And immediately,
and
what are you going to think? You're going to go, it can't really be just about snakes on a plane. It's just the title. There's got to be something else.
And then you go, and it is just about snakes on
right.
a plane.
Right. Then it becomes funny.
As long as, this is my big debate, if they made the movie with the intention of it being funny, then it will be funny.
Which they didn't. You know they
didn't.
If they
made the movie trying to make a serious movie, I don't think it would work.
They made it to make a serious movie.
That's tragic.
People on a plane. It was, you know, packed with...
That's tragic.
...with poisonous snakes as an assassination attempt. I mean, they tried to make it. I can guarantee it. Maybe I'm wrong. All right, if any of our listeners really
saw
that movie, we want to know.
Yeah.
So you have got to either post something or
put
what have you.
Forums.
We need a review.
www.rockstormedia.com/forum. Forum. Forum.
Now into movie making.
Now into movie making.
Did you post this Dungeons & Dragons Fan Film Fest again because you wanted to reiterate a point? Because we did have this before.
We did?
Yeah. I posted it like...
How many episodes ago?
I don't know, 5.
Okay. I think Blue Screen Mike sent it to us.
Oh.
It's like, is this a different one?
No, it's
so
the same one.
It.
Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, i.e., whatever their other name is, Wizards of the Coast, hosting a Dungeons & Dragons Fan Film Fest.
Yes.
So you can submit your own Dungeons & Dragons film.
And, by the way, I've given Blue Screen Mike 500 megs on our server.
Yes, for his Atomic Goose.
For his Atomic Goose stuff.
AG what? AGM?
AGM.
Atomic Goose Media. His logo's fantastic.
Yeah, so he's got no excuse but to post his stuff now.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah, so get to it, Mike.
Yeah.
All right. Play and then we'll make another one after that anyway.
That sounds good.
Okay.
So video game stuff.
Mark Jacobs is basically the owner of Mythic Entertainment, and
I've been wanting to talk about.
They're
this
doing Warhammer Online.
Crazy.
And he basically did an interview, and at the end of the interview, they asked him a question, and I didn't even know this was happening, but apparently they have scaled back E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo. Not as Aaron said, EverQuest 3. Why does that matter? No. The E3 is the Electronic Entertainment Expo, and for 2007 they downsized it.
Yeah.
And he made a very good point, which was a lot of times, even this happened to them.
Yeah.
They took their, you know, because they're an independent publisher, were until
they
bought eBay.
Outshined.
Right. Well, they can't even really get into the booth. It's almost
right.
impossible to get a booth there.
Right.
What happens is these independent developers come in, they get a booth, they show off a game that's fantastic, and some big-name publisher sees it and goes, holy shit.
Right.
They buy them or give them a bunch of money to get that project really off the
right.
ground, and now you've got a successful game, a good, innovative, successful game.
Well, and that's the thing, is that they're saying, the E3 people are saying that they need to downsize E3 because the business people can't get business done anymore. There's,
fuck the business people.
Well, that's the reason that they go to the show.
Yeah, but you're going to go there and you're going to end up seeing these recycled shitty games because none of these smaller companies can show any of their stuff.
But that's the point, is that I think what they're saying is that this started out being a trade show. And really, it was the chance for journalists and other people in the industry to either see your games or give you the ability to show your games to other people in the industry.
Right.
And what's happened now is that there are so many fanboys that get in there, and Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo and EA are all spending $10 million apiece on their booths, that it's become a spectacle more than it has an opportunity for business people to exchange business. That might be. Business.
Well, which is all fine and well. And the problem comes with, if Mark Jacobs' comment is correct in what
yeah.
he feels, I don't personally know, I hope this doesn't happen, but his contention is this will make it harder for independent publishers to get a booth.
I don't think it will. Because I think what...
I hope it doesn't, because
no,
that's where all of our innovative games are coming
yeah.
from. Not from these big companies who are zombying around, following
right.
in the footsteps
right.
of people.
Madden 07.
Yeah, it's just...
We need another Madden
game. Although EA made a good move, because they bought Mythic. With yeah. the... I mean...
Right. But I think part of the idea behind this, or part of the push behind this, is that, for example, somebody like Microsoft says, we're spending $10 million a year on E3. And we're taking our developers away from development time to generate trailers for E3. So instead of doing all that, why don't we fly out the people that we want to see our games, which is the media essentially, spend $2 million flying 200 people out and putting them up in hotels and taking them out to dinner and doing whatever we need to do. And so we can save ourselves $8 million a year by not being at E3 at all. And then the people that are running E3 go, oh shit, if Microsoft pulls out, then Sony's going to pull out, then Nintendo's going to pull out.
Here's the problem, though, with that whole contention, is that you have to build up... Hype meters are huge.
Right.
If you can't build some hype for the fans, then no one pays attention, no one cares, you've
yeah.
got no community, no one to... I mean, the communities that come up around these games are unbelievable. I mean, Warhammer is still a year plus away, and you've got, I mean, just huge communities that are doing nothing but scouring the boards for information.
I think that what Microsoft is saying is that, shit, if we're going to spend $10 million on hype, there's a lot better ways to do it.
Yeah, I don't
know.
I'm not sure why they're downsizing. Maybe that's the problem, but I can't see why that'd be a big deal. Especially if you're going to use Microsoft as an example, they've got money to burn.
Well, I guess the thing that confuses me is, why not just do it? Why not show up at E3 with $1 million booth instead of a $10 million booth?
Because those companies won't work that way.
That's what confuses me. It's just like, instead of bitching about it and say, well, we have to spend $10 million or not go to E3, it's just like,
yeah.
just don't spend the
$10
million.
Well, the thing is, that's not necessarily the reason that they're downsizing.
Right.
I mean, they might,
there's
they're
probably
not,
a lot of other factors.
Yeah, so,
but Comic-Con next year is going to have a video game section.
They are.
Yep.
Uh-huh. They're going to turn into a little mini E3.
And a side note, I don't know why a side note on Comic-Con specifically, but GeeksOn has two episodes, two out of the three, have been really good interviews.
Oh, yeah?
One was an interview with the guy that invented the term sci-fi.
Sweet.
Yeah, he's like 80, and he's got some awesome stories about like Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov. And,
nice.
I guess he has the ring and cape that I want to say Van Gogh, Vincent Price, wore in the original Dracula.
No way. Yeah.
So just really good interviews. And the one guy is a very famous writer. He wrote the Fire and Ice series.
Yeah, heard of it.
Okay.
I haven't read it, but I have heard of
familiar.
It.
It's the interview with the guy that wrote those.
Oh, very nice. Wow, so they got some writers in there.
Yeah, yeah. Little side note for Geeks On. The first guy, the guy that wrote the Fire and Ice series, they got that interview at Comic-Con, so that's why.
Oh, cool.
That's why I digressed.
All right, okay.
So Nintendo finally fucking sets a price for the Nintendo Wii, and I think it's a little bit higher than I had hoped it would be.
It looked like it was right around $250.
250 euros.
No.
Yes.
133 euros.
Well, it says the Wii console from Japan gaming giant Nintendo will cost under 250 euros.
Ah.
So 250 euros is currently about $325.
Yeah.
So my guess is it'll come out in the U.S. at $299.
Which is... Standard's usually $199, isn't it?
Yep. It's a next generation platform.
Right.
Inflation. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
Still way better than what you're paying for the others. Still. Although it's gotta come out $299 now, to be honest. Microsoft's Xbox 360 is now $299.
Is it really?
Yes, it is on sale, $299. Which means Sony's gonna come out going near $600 while Microsoft and Nintendo are running $299.
Apples to oranges, though.
I'm just saying
the basic version of the Xbox 360 is $299.
What's the basic version of the Sony PlayStation?
The basic version of the Sony PlayStation is $499. So $300 and $500.
Right.
$200.
So that's what I'm saying.
Right.
You either pay $299 for either one of two systems, you know, and since, I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I think
Wii
that
ends
price
up coming in at $250. I mean, a lot of the Microsoft guys, I've heard them saying, you know what you should really do is buy a Wii and an Xbox 360.
Right. And two consoles for the price of one if you're going to buy a PlayStation.
Yeah.
I'm really bummed with Sony. They've been really, they just really pissed me off.
I'm so bummed because the games look so good, and I know for a fact that at least $100 of that is that stupid Blu-ray player.
Yeah. Screw those guys
and
in there.
Just being greedy.
Yeah, they are. They are. Okay, and lastly, EVE Online Treachery.
Treachery.
This is probably a very old article, but it was kind of renewed today. Jeff pointed me to, or said something on Slashdot today, is somebody treachery. Somebody actually, this is all, of course, online money, but somebody actually stole
treachery.
Somebody actually got 700 million, what they call STK, which is the currency inside of
EVE Online.
EVE Online.
Okay.
So I was looking around for this kind of thing. And
am I stupid? I've never heard of EVE Online.
EVE Online is a massive online role-playing game set in space. It's a space opera-type game.
Is it popular?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And you do a lot of mining for minerals, and you can build your own ships and all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
And you have these huge corporations, i.e. Red Guilds.
Okay.
And this particular article is an older thing that happened where this guy, or this other guy, basically this organization,
yes,
was hired by someone else to take another corporation out. So, you know, they basically got people inside this guild who got in with people good and started working their way up in the ranks of the guild. And this took several months of these people infiltrating this guild.
Oh,
got to the
I
point
remember this article.
Where they could, they actually had access to all the guild banks.
Yes.
And they had a point in time where they decided to launch their strike. They assassinated the guild leader, destroyed her ship, which was one of two ships available anyway. No one else has them.
Really?
Destroyed her ship. They podded her, which is where they killed her escape pod, because they needed her body, which is the only way you can do that, is take her body, which actually means it sets her back with skills and stuff she's been working on, because they had to show her
wow.
body to somebody to prove that they did it. And then at the same time, all the people they had in the right places took all the money and equipment from all the guild banks and transferred it to their guild.
Wow.
So they had one guild that infiltrated another, assassinated the guild leader, destroyed all of their ships, took all of their gear and guild money, and left the thing in ruins.
Wow, dude.
And all perfectly legal. There was nothing illegal about it. The people who run the game are like, look, this world,
that's
we've made this world, and we expect people to do whatever they want.
We hope people do stuff
right.
like that, because that stuff is cool.
That actually, what's funny is I think about that, and I'm like, that is
makes
fucking
me want to play the game.
Awesome. Now, I downloaded the trial. There's a 15-day free trial for EVE Online. Oh. I downloaded a couple months ago and tried to play it. Their servers are unreachable from my house. The
what?
Only game I've ever played would do that. I could not reach their servers. It was
That's
like
weird.
The route that my provider takes to their servers.
Did you do a trace route to their servers?
Yeah, I couldn't get to them.
Fucked up, dude.
Yeah, I got lost a couple jumps probably prior.
You have to try it when you switch to the DSL.
Yeah. So, but I hear the interface is stellar and the game's got a lot of people in it.
I think the only question I would have in that scenario is, did they do any out-of-game communication?
Of course they did.
See, and I think that should...
They talked in the forums, on the chat boards.
See, that's no good. Shouldn't be able to do that.
Well, they have an in-character chat board where you have to talk in character the whole time. So they establish relationships and establish guild, because you can't be in-game all the time. So
right.
basically they established a relationship with the guild, these other people, and no one knew who they were.
Right.
And they didn't even know who themselves were.
Right.
They just knew. They were basically like terrorist cells that
yes.
infiltrated this
but
guild.
See, and this is what I'm saying, is that with terrorist cells, you have the potential to, capture a message from one terrorist to the other. Intercept. You have a chance to intercept a message from one person to the other. Or rat out some guy who... You know what I mean?
The same token, though, the guy who runs the guild, who did all the infiltration, said, look, we have a huge guild. And he says, nobody can do this to us because we have certain things in place that will stop it. So somebody could raid one of our guild vaults, but we have resources that we give out to certain people that no one has access to but them.
Okay.
So he says, we've gone through
all
the...
So there's a way to prevent the whole
thing. Oh, yeah.
I'm just thinking, like, when they hit the Do It Now button, if they did that through Google Chat...
No.
That would not be cool.
That didn't happen. They did that all in-game. I mean,
okay.
And even if they said the Do It Now button, they still had to coordinate the thing. They had to get this girl to go out with this guy who worked his way up. They had to get her to go out with him by herself in her super expensive ship that's one of two... Go into this one zone to do
they
something.
Say how long it took?
They had to fly other ships in, and they actually had some people from her guild that saw these ships come into the quadrant and were sending messages around like, shit, something's going down, something's going on, what's going on? And so they had problems that happened in the middle of trying to take this thing down, and they eventually took her out. And the guy who was with her, who had worked his way up into her good graces, they called him a Valentine something. His whole job was basically just to wow this person and really getting close. And he was like, they were best buds.
Wow.
Bam, and he was the one who did all the killing. He performed the killing blow on the ship.
Wow.
So, I mean...
Amazing.
And I think I just love it. I mean, the fact that somebody went through all this trouble and did this over a period of months. I mean, this took months to coordinate.
Yeah.
You know?
That's super cool.
But on the same token, all those people lost all that hard work that they did, all the gear they had in the guild vaults that they'd spent time investing, all the money, billions of online currency.
Sucks for them.
Which, by the way... This one particular instance, they could have sold all the currency they got online for 15,000 real dollars.
Ooh.
If they were to sell it on eBay.
Ooh.
Now, think about that. The newest instance was a scam. 700 billion, where this other one was 30 billion.
Ooh.
The 30 billion is worth 15,000 US dollars. 700 billion? What's that?
Right. It's math.
Yeah. A lot. It's worth a lot of real money to people who buy stuff online.
Wow. I wonder if you'll get like groups of people whose job it is to try and.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's a new profession,
yep.
And online role playing games,
craziness.
Infiltrating guilds and stealing guild resources and taking guilds out of play.
Craziness.
Now, granted, this company who did this one time, they have their own guild name. They were contracted out. That's their guild is notorious for being contracted to take out other guilds. That's what they do.
That's crazy.
So I think it's kind of brilliant. I think they're doing a bit of bridge gapping. I think they're
a bridge gapping between the real and the unreal.
Yes.
between the virtual world and the not so virtual world.
Welcome to the real world. okay. So,
anyway, do you have anything else before we wrap this up?
I'm hungry and I'm gonna make me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I think. Well. Okay. I'm Dan and I'm gonna. I don't know. I'm Dan and we are interviewing Charles Pippen tonight.
Yes. We're gonna have a martial arts special for all you martial arts
senior
freaks.
Instructor of Sanyan Do.
The first dojo tour 2006.
Which might extend into 7 and 8, depending
and
on
nine and
if
10.
We do more than one dojo.
Yeah, so look forward to that coming soon as well.
Alright. So I'm Dan. I'm going to probably stop at McDonald's. How about you?
I'm Sterling, and I'm going to make food right here in my own home.
You're going to make food right here in your own
home? I am.
All right.
It's going to be better.
You're going to get the... Well,
yeah.
Get
to...